Okay, sounds good.
Okay, we are back. You are listening to Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. We're live at the Beacon Building. We're at the top of the hour. And comedy cold cuts. That was fun. I really enjoy doing that.
Yeah, it really is fun. And it's amazing how much comedy out there is related to food. When I came up with the idea a few months ago, I said, well, we'll see how long we can make this go. But the biggest challenge is that a lot of comedians, I would say probably half of the ones that I screen or listen to, don't work clean. And I don't really have time to edit out all the swears, so I just pretty much eliminate those, even though the material might be pretty good.
Right.
Although I will say, somebody like Jim Gaffigan, who does all his comedy really clean, he's really good. And I get you can work clean and not be profane.
Yeah. So is there enough out there? Are you finding
that
there is plenty out there?
You know,
it's really fun. I enjoy it.
Yeah, thank you. It depends on the topic.
Right.
Give you an example. I was trying to find, when it was Cinco de Mayo week, I looked, and when I put in Cinco de Mayo comedy, I think there's like a Cinco de Mayo comedy troupe or something, you know, like a comedy group or whatever. And so all I was getting was them, and I was not finding any Cinco de Mayo, oriented comedy about that at all. So sometimes you get a little bit surprised by the stuff you can find or can't find, but there is no shortage of dieting or fattening foods, because we all struggle with that, and it makes for great comedy. So that was pretty easy. I don't know what we're going to do next week, but it's been fun. I actually worked at an all-comedy radio station in Washington, D.C. in 1983. It was the first one in the country, and that was back in the days of albums, and we had close to 50,000 vinyl albums, 33 and a thirds, for those of you under about 30. Your parents probably still have some. And I was amazed at all the topics that you could get and all the people that had comedy albums. The usual ones were like Bill Cosby at that point had something like 40 or 50 albums.
Really?
And we're talking 1983.
Of comedy albums?
Yes, just entire albums, comedy concerts. People like Bob Newhart. And then there were some people like Richard Pryor, of course, but again, his stuff was so filthy we couldn't play it. However, between 10 at night and 4 in the morning, in the backyard of the FCC in Washington, D.C., we were allowed to play anything. Unexpurgated comedy is what
they called
it. Back
in the day, you can't do that now.
I would say you probably can't. I'm not going to try it. Mr. Mansback is in the house up there with your brother, Brian. He is Manchester's official decorator, is he not?
He is. He definitely is.
He's designed radio stations I've worked for. But anyway, you never know.
He didn't design this, though.
No, he did not.
Brian and I did.
Because it's too practical. So anyway, it was a great experience working there and being exposed to some of the comedy. I mean, all the way back to W.C. Fields. And just, L. Jolson and Spike Jones, some of our older listeners, like me, would remember. And then the newer people coming up at the time. But anyway, that's for another day. Comedy Cold Cuts, a lot of fun to do. And he's a few minutes late, but we've got him on the line right now. I do believe Adam Richman joining us on The Pulse, WTPL. Adam Richman, you know him from any number of things. His new cookbook called Straight Up Tasty, Meals, Memories, and Mouthfuls from My Travels is just out. He is the host of Man vs. Food on the Travel Channel, where he eats insane amounts of food and tries to do it in a certain amount of time. Kind of gluttonous. Also, he is doing a show on NBC. Season 2 premieres on July 2nd. It's called Food Fighters, where home chefs actually take on big-time celebrity professional chefs. And Adam Richman will be signing his new book, Straight Up Tasty, at Northeastern University in Boston on May 27th. Adam Richman, welcome. I got to ask you right off the top here, based on Man versus Food, how often did you walk into a restaurant, a bar, or an airport and get challenged to an eating contest by a fan who may have been fueled by liquid courage?
Sometimes I have. The last time it really happened, I remember I was in Portland, Maine, and I was talking to a girl at a bar, and this dude comes over, and he's like, hey, I can eat more than you. I was like, hey, I'm in the middle of a conversation and I don't care. So, but that was
good for you.
That was a while ago, but now, generally speaking, it's a lot of love, and I'm grateful, truly.
We usually just see you eat. Now with Straight Up and Tasty, we get to see what you cook for others.
Yeah, I mean, it's these are recipes that I have my grandma's brisket, my mom's spinach pie, but I also you know, you don't do a show like mine or the shows. I mean, you know, now I have a different show on travel called Man Finds Food, which is about, like, hidden restaurants and off-the-menu dishes. Excuse me. And, you know, the thing is, I've seen so much culinary ingenuity, and I've sampled such amazing flavor combinations that, like, for example, my favorite sandwich in the country is in Philadelphia at a place called Reading Terminal Market, and it's roast pork with extra sharp provolone and broccoli rabe. So I took that combo and I put it in dumplings. Ooh. So it's just like playing with flavor, playing with technique, and just having fun.
And along those lines, Adam, I know that you encourage home cooks to use their imaginations with your recipes, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. Every recipe is part of a continuum. I mean, people think of bagels as something that's, you know, this Jewish Northeastern thing. But bagels have their roots in Poland, Austria, Russia, Korea, Montreal, before it ever got to New York. And so, literally, like poutine, for example, like awesome comfort food dish from Quebec, French fries, gravy, and cheese curds, right? But I had a version in Portland, Maine, with pork belly and a different kind of gravy. So what I did was, I did a different kind of spiced pork, and I used like a sort of spice variant that I tried in Asia. I made a gravy that's inspired by some flavors I had in Croatia. I did it over sweet potato fries instead of regular fries, and instead of cheese curds, I use Italian burrata cheese. And so the idea is that, A, if it turns people onto ingredients they don't normally eat, then that's awesome. And if it makes people who are afraid of getting in the kitchen start experimenting, that's exactly what I've always wanted.
Exactly. Brunch will never be the same with your Bloody Mary gazpacho and shrimp recipe. Amazing.
Well, I that's the other thing, too, is that I think people know what, like, gazpacho is. They know what Bloody Marys are. And, again, you know, I think people, like, cook with vodka, cook with, you know, but that's exactly the point. Like, I do a spinach salad, but I use, like, a Korean spiced bacon and different types of croutons and different types of dressing. And so is it groundbreaking? Am I using liquid nitrogen? Am I using a cryovac sealer? No. Why? Because most people at home don't have liquid nitrogen or a cryovac sealer or a marble mortar and pestle. You should just, you know, have fun. And I don't diss any of the chefs that are working like that, but I'm not that guy. I'm not a chef. I'm a darn good cook, and I pay attention as I go to these restaurants, and I keep notes, and I experiment, and that's it. It should just be about being, like, as I say, straight up tasty. Like, does it taste good? Was it fun to make? Do you make people happy when you serve it? Do you make yourself happy when you make it? Then it's awesome.
I'm glad you said that, because I know that you feel you're more like one of us than you are than the other chefs that you just alluded to. I think you feel like you're perhaps a little more grounded in some ways.
I mean, like I say, I'm not a chef. I'm a cook, and I learned from some of the best. My mom, my grandma, my bosses working in the restaurant industry since I'm 13. And, you know, I just said this yesterday at a book signing event in Portland that, you know, I never want to be someone different. Like, when people meet me in the street or meet me at a restaurant or meet me on a flight or something like this, I don't want to be different than they've seen me on television. I don't want to be inaccessible. I don't want to be some guy who's like so caught up with his own success that he forgets to be a decent human being. And the thing is, I feel that kind, good people make the best food. I mean, how many times have you heard that most overused soundbite, like, the most important ingredient is love? But the truth of the matter is, if you're a good person and you care about the people that you're cooking for, then you're always going to make a better dish. I don't care if it's a tuna sandwich or tuna tartare, it's going to be made properly.
Our guest on The Pulse today is Adam Richman. His new book, Straight Up Tasty, Meals, Memories, and Mouthfuls for My Travels, available right now. Signing books May 27th at Northeastern University in Boston. All right, Food Fighter Season 2 starts in July, and I watched a number of episodes in Season 1. It had its share of home cooks actually beating the big-time chefs, who usually took defeat gracefully. But I'm wondering, has any chef actually copped an attitude either on or off the
show? Oh, yeah.
Tell me about it.
I mean, you know, it's weird because clearly, you know, that's the big risk. People are like, well, the home cook, clearly they can win a lot of money. What's the downside for the chef, you know? Like, yeah, the home cook may not walk away with a bunch of money, and they all have, you know, families or charities or whatever they want to, you know, use this money for. But, you know, the pros, they have to deal with the fact that they were defeated by a non-pro. that they have to, that a housewife destroyed them 5-0.
I saw
and,
that one.
You know, some of them, yeah. And so some of them are like you say, totally gracious. And I'm super competitive, and I hate losing as well. But literally, there were times when, you know, the producers were like, we need you to go to this particular chef's dressing room and, you know, let him know it's okay. Or other chefs, like, stormed off. Like, so there's this season of Food Fighters, we have two kids that are the home cooks, a 12-year-old girl and then a 14-year-old boy. And this boy made a dish, and he rocked this one chef 5-0. And the funny thing was, the chef was, like, really, like, ebullient, like, lots of energy and kind of talking smack. And then this kid just totally crushed him. Dude, like, stomps off stage. Like, I go to shake his hand. The chef is ghost. Like, he's gone. He's like, whatever, dude. I want to be in front of a camera right now.
Oh, my goodness.
Speaking of being competitive, I heard you say that your Man versus Food winning percentage was about 65%. Can you have you ever calculated the largest calorie intake from one of your challenges?
Oh, my God. I dare not. I think that all I ever had to do was go, huh. I ended up being a dude with boobs. I clearly must have taken in thousands of calories. So it's nice to be on the other side of that one, because I found that, you know, while I can't speak to, like, the styles of the moment, that I found that it's pretty much conceived a much sexier look if you could see your feet. So I'm going to go with that one for a little while.
Adam, what's harder to deal with on Man versus Food, the sheer volume of the food or excessively spicy challenges?
You know, it's in hindsight, because you have to remember, I haven't done an episode of that show in nearly 5 years. And in recollection, like, they all suck. I mean, they're all, like, super difficult. So that is to say, so the heat was infinitely more winnable for me because I like spicy food, but that was infinitely more painful, whereas quantity was discomfort, but not quite as agony-inducing.
Yeah, what do you think of Japanese super eater Takeru Kobayashi, who pretty much can out-eat anyone, and he's like 125 pounds, 50 hot dogs in 12 minutes? What's his secret?
I mean, I don't know. I'm a Joey Chestnut man. You know, if I have
yes.
to go on either side of that sort of Pacquiao Mayweather of the food world, I'm Joey Chestnut all the way. And because, you know, they've apparently unionized like events like Nathan's, and Kobayashi, you know, showed up and was trying to do, you know, trying to, like, sort of steal his thunder. And they remember they arrested him a couple years ago, and he was trying to do this whole protest. And my thing is, look, can the guy eat? Sure. I was never a competitive eater. I did, you know, food challenges at restaurants, but I was never entering the Nathan's hot dog thing. And, you know, for me, I guess, you know, these guys, they train like athletes, and they have incredible capacity to do it. And I did for a little while, sort of, but I know I can't. I did it for a while. I couldn't possibly imagine doing it again.
Before I ask you my official last question, what's it going to take for us to get you to New Hampshire?
I love it. Well, the last time I filmed there was on my Best Sandwich show, because Samantha Brown, who's a Portsmouth native, we went to Jumpin' yep. Jay's Fish Cafe. I love New Hampshire. I mean, I believe it or not, so Dartmouth was my dream school when I was applying to colleges. And I remember going to Hanover and so wanting to go there. And in fact, one of my favorite restaurants in the country, the Black Trumpet, is in Portsmouth.
Right.
And I love that restaurant. I think it's extraordinary. So, no, I would love to come. And with a stepmom who lives in Swampscott and a signing at Northeastern, I really am hoping I get a chance to swing through, because, I mean, there is so much amazing food. And, you know, when we filmed the Portsmouth episode, you know, and we were going to Gilly's and really getting a chance to sample, like, great seafood and, you know, the amazing bounty that you guys have there. I mean, I'd go there in a heartbeat if schedule and time permits.
Well, I own one of the top 10 diners in the country by USA Today, the Red Arrow Diner, so I'd love for you to come visit it someday.
Where is it? Yeah, definitely.
Right
awesome.
In Manchester. It's in Manchester.
I'd be honored. Really, I would.
I would be honored as well. But I do have another question. Numerous sources reported that you dropped 70 pounds and have changed
yep.
to a partially vegan-based diet, or is that possible?
Well, no. So I, you know, it's so funny. I put the Mark Twain, my paraphrasing of Mark Twain, the reports of me going vegan have been greatly exaggerated. I play soccer, and it's a great way to keep the weight off. And I played in a pretty big, pretty well-publicized international tournament in Manchester last June. And so the final 3.5 months before, I actually adopted a plant-based diet. But what happened was, you know, there was this one reporter in England, and every question she asked was meant to be, like, incendiary, you know, trying to be provocative. And I don't take the bait like that. And so what she did was she took one sentence where I said, I adopted a vegan diet to whatever, instead of just saying plant-based, which is what I should have said. And so she, in an effort to make, like, kind of a clickbaiting headline, said, Adam Richman is now vegan. It's absurd. I ate a largely plant-based diet for 3.5 months last year. It's like if you had seen the amount of barbecue I rocked in San Francisco 2 nights ago, or the damage I've done to the box of Voodoo Donuts that are in my hotel room right now, which is making me like both filled with both sugar and shame. Yeah, I'm not a vegan. I'm an omnivore. But the thing is, I try to eat as healthy as possible. And for soccer, especially before games or before big tournaments, I'll sometimes go all plant-based because it's a great way to sort of stay full and eat a lot of, like, flavor and still feel satisfied without putting in, like, a lot of fat. But it's periodic at best.
He's the man known for sugar and shame, ladies and gentlemen, Adam Richman. Straight up tasty meals, memories, and mouthfuls from my travels. You can have him sign your book May 27th at Northeastern University. Look for him walking the streets of Swampscott, by the way, because you never know, he might be down there as well. And, of course, the new Season 2 premiere of Food Fighters, July 2nd on NBC. What fun. Thank you so much, and come see us in New Hampshire sometime if you can.
Deal. See you at the Red Arrow.
Very good. Right. Thank you, Adam. Bye-bye.
No worries.
All right, you got to hold him to that, Carol.
Oh, my gosh.
You remember the name. See, a lot of times at the end of the interview, a celebrity would not think to say that.
It's got
to make you
that.
Feel good.
I definitely caught that. Just like when Hillary Clinton was at the diner for a couple hours, and then she was looking for someone, and she was actually looking for me and remembered my name.
She was?
Yeah.
Wow. You
to say thank you.
Oh.
Which
nice.
Was really gracious.
And then you voted Republican anyway, so no. I'm only kidding. Well, maybe I'm not. I don't know.
Talk about that.
It's funny that he mentioned he wanted to go to Dartmouth. He actually, which is an Ivy League school, he actually went to Yale, which is another well-known Ivy League school. And that's where he, I believe, studied. He didn't major in theater, but he did study that. And they have a very, very famous theater program at Yale. So I had a friend that went through it. So, interesting guy. And
he is a cool guy. You can tell he's humble and, you know, true to who he is. And, you know, because a lot of those people, they don't do that. And I'm thinking of one in particular.
But we try to screen them for humility. And if they're humble, then we put them on the air, right?
Yeah, right. he seems like he really, really is.
Yes, definitely is.
All right. You're listening to Food for Thought. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to be back with Ruth Zacks.
We're talking ribs, baby. Chili, I should say.
Yeah. I'm like, ribs?
Yeah.
I think we're talking chili, so we're going to talk about chili. So stay tuned. Food for Thought will be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7. The Pulse.
Well, it is Food for Thought Friday afternoon, our final half-hour segment. It's all about the chili here shortly, but first I want to tell you we're brought to you by Red Arrow Diners. You talk about some great chili. Manchester, Milford, and now the drive-through version in Londonderry, right next to the liquor store and the gas station. And I think there's going to be a big to-do and a grand opening of the whole plaza, or a big thing with celebrities, some of whom we can't mention at this point.
Yes,
right?
It's a secret. 28th and 29th.
Tom Brady. Oops, no. I didn't. Oops, I didn't say that, did I?
You didn't.
Also,
stop, Mike.
Fallon's Furniture, the official decorator of our green room, Food for Thought, and Kale and Company enjoying that, plus our guests when they come to visit. And our guest who is in studio with us today is a longtime friend of mine, and her connection to the food world is being heavily involved in a fundraiser, the annual Henniker Rotary Chili Fest, also known as Fire on the Mountain, which I think is a brilliant name, Pat's Peak here in New Hampshire on August 23rd this year. Ruth Zacks, so good to see you. Welcome.
Great to see you.
Oh, give her some air. Give her some air. Hey. Okay.
Great to be here.
Sorry, Ruth. Oh. It's my fault.
That's all right. So how many years? Because I have been judging now for 6, 7, 8 years, I think.
Yeah, we began the Chili Fest. This will be our 13th year, lucky 13.
Oh.
So we're kind of playing on that with our marketing this year. But, this is, and it's grown every year. In the first couple of years, it was just a very small town little thing, but mm-hmm. it's become a real destination event in the
People
last few years.
People talk about it. They really do.
Yep, they
you know,
do.
It's, I mean, Chile is such a diverse, I mean, everybody loves chili, and there's so many different ways you can make chili, so.
Right, and that's what we've tried to encourage. We haven't gone the route of being part of the International Chili Association. We've let people be creative with their chili. So, and we have had chocolate chili.
Mm-hmm.
We've had seafood chili.
Ooh.
We've had moose meat chili.
Oh, yeah, every year there's
and
at least
then we've
one
had the
meat.
Very famous Red Arrow chili yeah. the last 2 years. And as a matter of fact, I brought an application for you to fill out today, Carol.
Do you have two of them? Because, you know, I was discussing it upstairs. Because did you see the cafe upstairs?
I did,
Midtown Cafe?
Yeah.
Because I own that also. And Brittany, the manager there, she's like, I was telling her about you coming on, and she's like, I make a really good chili, you know, and she does. She makes an excellent
chili. That would be great.
She's like, do you think, you know, that I could maybe? I'm like, I don't see why not. Mm-hmm. So,
well, we have two contests. Yeah, we have the professional for restaurants and caterers like yourself, a restaurant. And the cafe. And then we have a number of amateurs who submit their chili, and it could be service clubs or fire stations or policemen or just individuals who think they make a mean chili, and we let them all enter.
That's probably one of the items I think you hear a lot of people say that too. You know, I make a great chili. You know, you hear that a lot.
You oh,
know,
you
chili
do.
Chili is very popular.
You put your money where your mouth is,
that's
right?
That's right. That's right. And actually, I do have two applications.
Perfect.
With me.
See, you brought that.
See,
for
Ruth is very good at anticipating things like that. She brought two forms today.
I want to know who came up with Fire on the Mountain.
Well, I
love
actually,
that.
It's just a line from Charlie Daniels, Devil Went Down to Georgia.
That's right. It
I don't
is.
Know if it came from that.
It didn't come from that. It was something that a colleague of mine and I came up with when I took over the marketing of the event for our club. I wanted to come up with a brand. Henniker Rotary Chili Fest just wasn't very exciting.
But it's the only Henniker on earth
it
for
is,
the 5,000th time.
And so I guess I would have to give credit to my very creative co-conspirator at Child and Family Services where I work, and that's mm-hmm. Kat Strange.
That
she
was
and
Kat's...
she and I were...
Commingling with
commingling
you?
Commingling ideas and coming up with catchphrases. And what I had was the logo, or the beginnings of a logo. And it was this chili pepper with fire all around it. And then we sketched in the mountain around it, and it just, it worked.
It's ideal. I love it.
It's worked.
Very catchy. And
yeah.
And we should point out, it's really a great family day. It starts around noon,
it
right?
It starts
typically?
At noon. And there are between 35 and 40 chilies. Our judges, like Mike, have to pace themselves because there are lots of tasting to do. There's a kids zone with lots of activities for kids. The White Birch Community Center, which is our licensed child care center in Henniker, manages all of the activities. There are vendors and concessions and, of course, beer, because you can't have chili without beer.
Got to.
And there's a car cruise in. And
live music.
Right? Yeah, this year we've got a new band coming in, Rosemary's Baby Blues. They're from Boston, and
cool.
with special guest Jeff Dearborn on blues harp.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is we've expanded to have some caterers there as well. So
we'll have
some ribs.
Chili. Oh, you know, I did slip and say that.
You
so
did
maybe,
that.
We'll maybe have, I was brilliant, didn't realize
yep,
it.
Yep, we'll have ribs, we'll have corn on the cob, we'll have ice cream. Can we say?
So it really is a huge event.
Something from Chew, New Hampshire?
Yeah, from Chew, Hampshire. I will be making a bunch of my chocolate infinity cookies. I'll have a booth and hopefully some other merch to sell by that point. So
so that'll be a lot of fun. And I always add to the festivities. And it's really a fun afternoon.
But you've really kind of restructured the layout, which I think is going to be very not as more than aesthetically pleasing, or it's going to be a more practical way for people to work their way through and more
right.
comfortable, because you pretty much had most of the chili vendors inside the rooms or
the two ski lodges.
And are you moving them outside?
We're moving everybody outside under
Good.
tents. what was developing is over the last couple of years, as it's become more popular, we kind of reached a max of attendees, and the lines to get into the tasting rooms were so long that people were getting discouraged by it. So Pat's Peak is helping us to reconfigure the event. We're going to have more of the activities up on the slopes. We'll probably use the ski lodges for something else, maybe for the vendors, maybe for eating. But the tasting will happen outside under different smaller tents. And people won't have to stand in line. They can just, you know, they can go to one chili spot, and if there's a line at the next one, they can go somewhere else.
You didn't have that option before because they were all side by side.
Right.
And if you didn't get in line, because there was only one entrance to get into
that's
the
That's right. One
areas.
Entrance in, one entrance out.
Right.
So,
good thinking.
We're still working on it because it was such an unusually long winter at the mountain. We really haven't gotten up there to block everything out yet, but it'll happen in the next couple of weeks.
When is this Chili Fest happening?
August 23rd. Okay. It's kind of the last hurrah for summer, the weekend before Labor Day. And it's...
And it's usually a Sunday.
It's always a Sunday.
Right? Yeah.
And it attracts people from all over. We've had people enter the chili contest from Nashville, Tennessee.
I remember that. A couple years in a row, right?
Yeah, a couple years in a row.
That's cool.
Part of an extended family of one of our Rotarians. Mm-hmm. But to have them coming up, family members coming up to enter this chili contest from New Jersey and upper state New York and Nashville, Tennessee has always been quite remarkable.
Well, I told you I was on vacation and picked up a newspaper, and in Philadelphia.
Yeah, the Inquirer.
The Philadelphia, and there was a little thing on the Fire on the Mountain Chili Fest.
Yep. I think this year we're going to be featured in the Sunday Boston Globe in their special section.
Oh, good. Yeah.
On
that's huge.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that. They reached out to us, and I think that's what's been remarkable for us is. You know, as much as we do to promote the event, people reach out to us and have been asking us to feature it.
That's so, because it's so successful.
Yeah,
you know, you've been doing it for 13 years.
Yeah,
and,
it's
and
a
that
wonderful
just goes
event.
To show you.
And
you
it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work.
Of course.
And it takes a lot of volunteers. And God love them, we've got a great community. And our Rotary Club is only 27 members. And most of them, like myself, are not...
22?
Yeah, we're not 18 to 49. We're beyond that. Mm-hmm. So I think the average age of our club members is 62.
Mm-hmm.
So people from the community, from New England College, from the sports teams come and help us with all of the fetching and carrying. We've got some high school kids from the DECA clubs who participate. They manage a survey for us, a market survey. People's, you know, Rotarian spouses and kids and neighbors all participate. And there's probably 80 volunteers that make this happen.
Well orchestrated by you and your fellow Rotarians,
right.
I must say.
It's a great committee.
Now, I am one of the judges. Apparently, I have a permanent seat on this panel.
That's
because
correct.
They won't let me go. Chef Nicole Barrera and Rick Broussard.
Right.
So
well,
he's awesome.
He really is. So it's three very different palates.
The three definite foodies.
Yes, for sure. And I have to tell you, because I've been a judge in the International Chili Society when it was in Manchester, for 2 years in a row, and it's a vastly different process. But what I love about your Chili Fest is the variety of flavors. Now, when you judge a national competition, these are the best of the best. They don't taste very different from one to the other. Now, it was also a Chili Verde. The category that I judged anyway, which was wonderful. I'd never had
the same one.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did.
All right, so then you understand, you walk around that table and you sample 40 chilies in an hour, and it's tough.
It's very tough.
To pick a winner. So you assign numbers, which kind of help you recall, which we also do.
We do.
For Fire on the Mountain. But the variety, because you have home chefs and people that are just putting it together, wow, you really taste a lot of different chilies.
You do, and some are...
I loved it.
Very good, and some are not as very good.
Right, no names.
No names.
That's the fun of it, though.
I know. Well,
it sure is.
And what we encourage people to decorate their booths, and there's a separate contest for the best booth. and we encourage people to come up with a creative name for their chili, although it's a blind taste test that
the judges do. Correct. We get it by numbers only.
Yeah, they do it by numbers only. But there is also a People's Choice Award in both categories. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Red Arrow won second place in the People's Choice Award.
Well, that's pretty good because you got thousands of people voting. I mean, that's you got to take that and be happy with it.
Right. So I think, well, we all know your chili's great. So
thank you.
Yep. Yeah. Is that one of the top things that people say?
It is.
That they I mean, I know you know what the volumes of everything is, but burgers, is that like the top thing?
Burgers has been as of late, you know, but chili's always been a mainstay.
Sure.
You know, it always has. Way back when we were voted one of the top 10 diners in the country, it was mentioned in that particular article that the chili is, you know, very good.
Whose recipe is it? Do you know?
It's mine.
It's your recipe?
It is.
Well, that's exciting.
It is. You know, we've tweaked it a little bit here and there years ago, but it, you know, now it's, you know, consistent.
So is the recipe locked away somewhere under lock and key, like the 11 secret herbs and spices of Kentucky Fried Chicken?
No. I am not like that. I'm not like that. If you want my chili recipe, I'll give it to you. It's no big deal. Although I'm going to give it to you in the batches that we make at the Red Arrow, and then from there you'll have to do what you need to with it.
Okay.
But, you know, when we were on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, and we showcased our American Chop Suey was one of the things, and we got so, and we still do to this day because they still repeat it, strangely enough, we get so many requests for the recipe. And, you know, of course, my staff, they're like, we can't give the recipe. I'm like, really?
That was one of the things I thought about is asking everybody to give their recipes so that we could put together a cookbook.
I bet some of them won't, though.
Yeah. And
it's proprietary information.
Well, not only that is, well, what if somebody, if I'm a winner, and what if somebody else enters next year using my recipe?
Yeah,
so
that's lame. I think Carol's got the right beat on it for that.
We have it on our website.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know, if anybody really asked me, and you know, when I used to waitress up until like 3-4 years ago, you know, every once in a while you get somebody say, you know, I really love your whatever, American Chef, you know, whatever. And I'm like, do you want the recipe? Because, you know, we have big, you know, recipe books, and I went, made them a copy, and here you go. You know, I mean, what are they going to do? Go open up a restaurant and make American Chop Suey and put me out of business? You know, my dad and I both are on the same page with that. So,
Your soups are my staple. I do your soups.
Don't you love our soups?
I think your soups
I mean, everything's
are fabulous.
Homemade, and you know, yes. Thank you. Appreciate
They're
that.
My staple.
I still don't get how you can make such huge volumes of food as restaurants do, and certainly the Red Arrow does, and have it be consistently good all the time because. You know, I'm sure you got good people and they're used to doing it, but it amazes me that restaurants can do that.
Yeah. You got to quality and consistency is the key to the business, really. So, you know, we were talking with Carrie Lehman the other day.
Tidewater. Right.
You know, we talked about that. But we need to take a short break.
Okay.
And we are in studio with Ruth Zach. She is in charge of the Fire on the Mountain Chili Fest that happens in August. This year it's going to be August 23rd. She's going to stay with us. And Food for Thought will be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 1077 The Pulse.
Welcome back. Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. We're live at the Beacon Building right at 814 Elm Street. You are listening to 107.7 FM. And we are in studio with Ruth Zachs. She is head of the Chili Fest at Pat's Peak, otherwise known as Fire on the Mountain. And we're talking chili today.
Well, and August is kind of the time football season is starting to kick in. And for me, I think football, I think chili. So the important thing, though, now for you here, Ruth, is to drum up some people that maybe have not participated in the past because they didn't know about it, didn't hear about it. Here's a chance to reach a whole new bunch of people.
Okay, great. We would love to invite anybody who's listening, whether you're a restaurant, a caterer, or just somebody who makes a darn good chili for football season, to consider entering the Chili Fest. We have a website. And you can download the application to make chili from the website. It's www.chilinewhampshire.org. If you're an amateur, we ask you to make 4 gallons of chili. If you're a professional, we ask you to make 6 gallons of chili. And you can use whatever ingredients you like. although we're not partial to ghost peppers.
Yeah.
One year we had...
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, one year we had a very, very... It wasn't a palatable chili.
No, it definitely was not. And luckily, the judges were tipped off by somebody that we actually worked with at the station at the time. And he came and said, chili such and such is probably not good for you to have because it's so hot. He took a little bite of it. And I don't know if it was ghost chilies or not, but ghost chilies are the hottest in the world.
Yeah.
And they may very well have been. And I just put a little bit on the tip of my tongue, and we disqualified them, I think.
What happens when you have something mm-hmm. quite that hot, it ruins your palate to taste anything
else.
It
does indeed.
So, but just to finish up, so to enter a chili, it's only $15. And amateur chili makers are eligible for cash prizes. There's a first, second, and third prize from the judge's choice, and then there's also a People's Choice Award. The attendees get to vote, and the restaurants or the professionals get a lovely plaque and a beautiful banner to hang in their restaurant for a year. To denote that they've won.
Those are beautiful banners, by the way, yeah. that you give out. They are mm-hmm. really nice.
Yep, you had one for a year.
Nice.
And so anybody out there who's listening who wants to make chili, go to www.chilinewhampshire.org and check out what we're doing.
So all you listeners out there that, you know, because there's so many people out there that I'm thinking of actually June, my friend June.
Oh, right.
June makes a great chili. Mm-hmm. She would be awesome to go in this. You know, I mean, $15, and mm-hmm. it's a fun day.
Four gallons.
And
oh, it's fun just meeting the people.
Well, that's what exactly. Yeah. I love doing those things.
I do. I did the mac and cheese contest a couple years ago.
I work the booth this year.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah.
Yes. That would be great to have you there, Carol.
Yes.
It's as a judge, and you've judged chili before, it's not that hard in terms of, oh, my God, how am I going to eat it all? It's not like man versus food. You just take one little spoonful or maybe two, clear your palate, move on to the next one, score mm-hmm. it. And we ended up, I think you said, in the neighborhood of 40 or so.
38 chilies last year.
Yeah, it's not a daunting task.
No,
it's
and basically
very enjoyable.
You do one contest first.
Yes.
Then you take a break.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beer break, I think.
I will be honest, it's best to clear your palate with beer if you drink alcohol.
There you go.
And you'll have to get permission from Rocco for this.
Well, my 6 weeks will be up by then.
Oh,
so,
right.
You know,
exactly.
Hopefully I'll be able to do things in moderation by then. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I'm following a strict diet menu plan.
Oh.
As I should say. Menu plan, not diet.
Okay.
So, but you know what? Now I remember why, because I usually work those booths when mm-hmm. the Red Arrow is in them. And I'm always on vacation in August usually at that time. But we have a caller, actually. Uncle Ray is on the line.
Uncle Ray! What are you about, Uncle
what's
Ray?
Hey, what's going on?
Not too much. How about you?
Pudding shots.
Well, you know, I'm listening to your show, and I have to come up with a chili shot.
Oh! All right. So what kind of
what
liquor? Yeah, well.
It's got to be tequila.
Yes.
Yes. Tequila and chili and...
I will be your first guinea pig, Uncle Ray.
You heard that, Uncle Ray.
Yeah. Perhaps not on...
Next week, I'll be bringing them in.
All right. Now, here's the thing, Uncle Ray. I need to go with the top shelf liquors.
Okay.
Either Patron or Cabo Wabo would be my two choices.
I'll give you that.
Listen to him. I bet you he won't even be able to tell the difference.
Well... somebody who drinks that, they can tell.
Yeah, but in chili?
Well,
who knows?
I'm not a good recipe for chili, but I'll think of something.
All right.
I'll work on that this week.
Catch me
that sounds fun.
Toward the end of the show, because I want to be a good partner for Carol and not be sitting here wasted trying to put two words together. So look forward to that.
I won't keep you. I know you guys are coming close to the end.
Yeah,
thank
that's
you.
That's correct. My career is anyway.
Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Ray.
Bye, Uncle Ray. Thank
Bye.
You.
See you later.
Today, my uncle came in and brought pudding shots because you're probably wondering what that was all about.
Is he your uncle?
That is really my uncle.
Okay.
They come in and they eat upstairs in the cafe, and he brought in pudding shots today for the family. And I was telling Mike on the air, and he wanted one. So during the break, I went up to get him one, and now Uncle Ray was calling. He's listening to our chili talk. And
I wonder if anybody's ever put tequila in their chili before. What an interesting idea.
That is quite interesting.
I think it's definitely very intriguing.
It is. Tequila and lime.
Yeah, exactly.
In chili would be really interesting.
Yeah, make a tequila sort of a, lime chili.
Yeah. Sort of a Key West or Cuban take on chili.
Yeah.
Maybe with some pineapples in it? Or
You could do you that know? To get I the mean, sweet to cut mm-hmm. the
Maybe I'm going to be an amateur.
I've thought about it, but I have too much fun judging because I make a decent chili, although Barbara makes a better chili than I do. So I'd rather have she do it. She'll probably man my booth while I'm judging.
Sounds good.
The Chew Hampshire faction will be there, so rolling out my cookies. I did get my first corporate order last week, so
that's
very excited about that. Yeah,
I think 10 dozen, right?
Yeah, 10 dozen, man. I was
hoping there'd be some here today.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm all baked out.
No, because I'm watching what I'm eating. He's not allowed to bring them in.
No food in, though.
We get enough food in here.
I hear our music. We've got 30 seconds to say goodbye. Give us the address one more time for those that would like to enter Fire on the Mountain.
www.chilinewhampshire.org.
And it's August 23rd, and we'll keep talking about it. And we'll have to maybe have you back right before.
Yeah.
Pat's Peak and Henniker.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
Up next, Kale and Company. We'll see everybody next week. Bye.
Bye.